Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Bum 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 bum
bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum
bum bum bum bum bum.
Yes. No, we're here to talk about movies.
Oh, well, that's what I was doing. I was doing the training montage that's very popular in a lot of the 80s.
You gotta montage.
Like, especially like Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's like, I gotta learn Kung Fu to fight Freddy, only to inevitably die to not Freddy in the room.
Ah, so unfortunate.
Yeah, it's rough. Nightmare on Elm Street 4, looking at you.
Oh, the best fourth movie ever.
Is that true?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's better than Halloween 4, I'll say that much.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a true statement.
Yeah. Yep, sorry, Danielle Harris.
I don't know what the best fourth in a movie franchise is.
Oh, man, that's hard.
There's not as many as you would think, but I feel like it's
probably... Oh, no, Friday the 13th has a strong one. That's the final chapter.
Ooh, okay, that's
good. For
that
franchise. I'm not saying that's like a strong movie or anything.
It ain't Indiana Jones, I'll tell you that.
It's not Indiana Jones, nope, definitely not.
It's not Aliens.
It's not Star Wars.
It's not Star Wars. Very tough. Very interesting.
It's not The Hobbit.
We'll have to do a thesis paper on this at some point.
The best fourth?
The best fourth.
It's not Terminator.
It's not Terminator. I like that we're doing this thought exercise live.
Yeah. This is how we prepare. Not talk about it at all and then just drop random bullshit.
Yeah. Well, it came to me.
Could be Jurassic Park because that's Jurassic World.
Sure.
And I don't love that movie, but it's a strong entry in the series.
Right. But what's better? That's the whole thing.
Right. We're talking about a fourth movie here.
There's got to be some glaring thing where they're just like, you didn't even think of this.
Right. Exactly. Phantasm 4 is a little rocky, but I still liked it.
Sure.
Hellraiser. It's definitely not Hellraiser. Definitely not Leprechaun.
I love that Hellraiser, though. I love that. That's
Space.
Yeah.
That is one of the strongest Hellraiser sequels, sadly.
I love that one.
That's Space, yeah.
I love that
one. Yeah.
I will.
That one is, no joke, that could be in the top, like, it's not two, but it's, like, after two, one of the best sequels in the Hellraiser franchise.
Well, yeah, three is pretty bad.
Yeah, three is god-awful. I will fight you.
Yeah.
Captain Nostalgia. I'll fight you.
I'll fight
good.
You right here, right
he
now.
He likes that movie way more than I do.
Well.
Sorry, buddy.
You wrong, sucker. But we're here to talk about movies that probably aren't fourths in a series. Mine aren't.
Oh, shit. No, mine's not. Okay.
All right, sweet. Well, let's get that theme right out of your heads. Let's talk about some movies. Do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
I'd love for you to lead off here.
Well, I'll lead off. I'm going to lead off strong.
Oh, baby.
I know. Look at that, huh?
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Here's a strong lead. You ready?
Yeah.
1967, before cinema was even thought of.
That's right.
Les Samurai.
Oh, this is the first movie.
This is the first movie.
The first ever movie.
That's right.
Can't be the fourth. It's the first one.
That's right.
Damn.
All of these are lies, but it is Les Samurai.
Okay.
Have you seen this movie?
No.
Okay. So this movie, I actually started employing a random movie generator.
You torture yourself in unique ways to this podcast.
But I can pick the time frame and the streamings I have, and it'll pop out a movie.
That's wild to me.
So I did it with this one, and I'm like, wait, isn't this like a beloved movie? It is. I'm like, oh, you haven't done me wrong, random generator. It'll do me wrong in the near future. Do not worry.
Okay.
And in a funny way. But this is actually a very good French movie.
Okay.
I watched it on the 19th of February, 2024. It's an hour 41 crime drama thriller directed by Jean-Pierre Melville.
Okay.
Starring Alain Delon, Francois Perrier, and Natalie Delon as well. So I guess they got married at some point.
Makes sense.
That's how that works, I guess, even in France. IMDb, movie summary. After professional hitman Jeff Costello is seen by witnesses, his efforts to provide himself an alibi drive him further into a corner. This movie's awesome.
Okay.
This is a very moody, gritty movie. Basically, he is hired by people through an associate. He never knows who really hired him to go murder this guy at a nightclub. So he literally just walks in, walks straight to the back, goes in the room, and shoots the guy point blank. When he is coming out of the room, though, he is seen by the lounge singer that works there, and a bunch of other people take note of him as he's leaving. So this whole movie is him building an alibi, which he's already done the work of where he was.
Right.
He says he's at this card game and that he was with this woman earlier, and they're all on board. But there's slowly cracks that start happening with the story to where this police chief, is like, he's convinced it's him.
And, okay.
I mean, he's right. It is him, but he has to prove it.
Interesting.
And it's, since it's the 60s, it's a really cool story. Like, it was a rainy day. Everybody had their rain jacket on with their hat. Everybody looks essentially the same.
Right.
Same drab, gray kind of clothing on.
Absolutely.
So they literally are just like, anybody who was outside from this time to this time, wrangle a bunch of people up and just bring them in. And they do randomly pick him.
That's cool.
So they have 100 people in here. They bring in the people from the club. They're like, who do you think it is? And they start narrowing it down. And it's pretty cool. And they're like, they do things like, let me try something. And they like take this guy's hat off, put it on this guy.
Huh.
Things like that.
And very like 12 Angry Men-esque.
It's very much that.
Yeah.
It has that feel, which I'm just like, this is so cool. And it's large. Actually, just this guy
doing detective work. I'm gonna watch this guy at work today.
It's essentially that.
Awesome.
It's pretty compelling though, and there's like people will get eliminated and like people will stay in, and you're like, man, they kind of think it's that guy, but it's not that guy,
right?
You know the whole time who it is.
That's rad.
Eventually they get to the point where like half of the people who were like, yes, it was him, and the other half are like, I just don't know.
Oh, cool.
So they end up eventually letting him go, and then from there they bug his hotel room. He still will not let this go. Then the other people who hired him are trying to murder him as well.
Oh,
so
wow.
There's this big plot, and there's a really cool scene in this movie where he takes the train, which is near his apartment, and they have cops at every stop along, and they're trying to track where he's going, and he's trying to meet up with the people to be like, shit went south, but I think I'm good, pay me, kind of thing.
Right.
They try to murder him, and it just turns into this big, bizarre noir story, essentially.
That's rad. How long is this movie?
1 hour 41.
Then they managed to do all of this. Take note, people.
Yeah, no, this movie I would highly recommend. If you're into film, watch this movie. I think this was such a good job, random movie generator for pulling. I think I watched it on Max, if that helps anybody.
Okay. HBO had it. I feel like it's bought itself several fuck-ups here with
for
how
sure.
strong of a recommendation this sounds like.
Yeah, and I believe it's in the Criterion Collection.
That makes sense.
I believe that popped up at the beginning.
Yeah, because I think HBO Max has the TCM stuff on their streaming service. So a lot of classic movies. If you're into classic cinema or you want to be,
and
definitely. Yeah, definitely at least worth. I'm sure they probably have like a 30-day free trial or some shit you can watch and just devour a bunch of classic film.
Well, make sure it's on there still at that point.
Yeah.
But this movie was a real blast. I don't want to give you too much more, but like, it's very gritty, very moody, and just really tense, because the whole time you're like, do you even want him to not get caught?
Right.
Like, you're rooting for him. Everybody else
Why?
Is like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So you're really questioning yourself, but like, you also don't want him to get killed by the mob people. He doesn't deserve that. Does he deserve that? It's like all these questions.
It's cool. It's very, very much like, while doing a thing, it's cutting to the core of like human nature and why we challenging cinema, which the French were definitely trying to do
for
very
sure.
Much.
And it doesn't feel any weird. It doesn't feel foreign because it's in France.
Right.
Like, it's just a city. You don't know it. It feels like New York, but you don't know. So it's very relatable.
I like that.
Yeah, this movie was pretty sweet.
Sounds good.
IMDb gave it an 8.0. So you know.
Right.
It
broke the 7 barrier.
For sure. Rotten Tomato critics. 35 of them.
Okay.
What do you think?
Ooh, I have no good guess here. I would go with 90 flat.
100%.
Damn, okay.
So this is definitely people going back to this movie like, I heard this is great.
This is like one of those underappreciated movies more people need to watch.
Yep.
Yeah.
The audience, 10,000 plus, 94%.
Holy cow.
No wife score. I ended up giving it a 7.5.
Okay.
But I could be swayed to go higher.
It sounded like a higher when you were leading into it here.
Yeah, I mean, it has some pacing issues. It's not perfect, but I do think, despite what everyone else says, I don't think it's perfect, but I think it is a very good older movie and a very good detective movie and something different that people should watch.
That's awesome. I like the fact that it kind of has more to say than just what's on the surface, which is great.
100%.
Okay, I will try to follow that up with my review of 1982's Cue the Winged Serpent.
Oh, it is a classic.
It's part of Jared's Alphabet Challenge.
Jared's Alphabet Challenge. My name is Jared, and I love that fucking alphabet girl.
He does.
Girl.
Watch this on the last day of January of 2024. It is 1 hour and 33 minutes. It's a horror crime film directed by the epic Larry Cohen, starring Michael Moriarty, David Carradine, rest in peace, Richard Roundtree, rest in peace, and Candy Clark.
Candy.
Hi. Your movie summary here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Fleeing? Okay, yeah. A fleeing gangland flunky finds the New York nest of Aztec deity Quetzalcoatl, a man-eating flying serpent.
There you go.
Yeah, my secretary doesn't believe in L's that are appropriately sized, so apologies.
That one's floating away.
It is. That's because it's Quetzalcoatl.
Sure.
The fleeing gangland flunky. I wish they left out flunky, because it'd be the fleeing flunky finds, which would be very alliterative.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that. I did not write that. My secretary transposed it here poorly. My thoughts on this movie. I mean, if you are not familiar with Larry Cohen, Tim, you did a review for a Larry Cohen movie, The Stuff.
The Stuff.
A while back. Yes. Larry Cohen is a very unique filmmaker, often referred to as King Cohen. There's even a documentary called King Cohen about Larry Cohen. I just like Larry Cohen, and now kind of following in his shoes in a way would be Larry Fessenden, okay, who does a lot of low-budget horror movies. You reviewed one of his, Alaskan evil creature, Wendigo.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Antlers was that.
Yeah. One. Yep. Yes. That's Larry Fessenden's huge into the Wendigo.
I can definitely see that.
Yes.
I could see that, sure.
They're very similar in that they're both low budget East Coast filmmakers, and they both are all about trying to make a cool, actually intelligent movie underneath of a creature feature.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, sure, where they're trying to eke out depth in a B-movie, I guess is the best way to describe it. Like, push the boundary of what a B-movie can be.
I like that.
Like, to hold dear still the cheeseball nonsense that makes a B-movie, but at the same time try to elevate it while keeping it in the arena is how I kind of feel about them personally.
I agree with all
that. And I think Larry Cohen does a good job of that here, because while he does have a, like, very King Kong era amount of special effects in his 1982 sure creature feature, it's what he could afford. And the more important thing that I think is really cool about this movie that a lot of people tend to overlook about Q, if they're not, is you watch it for a creature feature and you're like, this is kind of stupid. However, if you think about the different points of view Larry Cohen brings to it, it's more like a, hey, what if there was a giant flying serpent that nested in one of these tall skyscrapers? How would that impact New York?
And that's enough of an idea.
It's really cool to see that he's like, I want to, like, a criminal finds it, but the cops are trying to track it down. And then the intellectual crowd in New York starts to worship it because they sure take it to be Quetzalcoatl. And so they start a cult. And they're, like, starting back the Aztec rituals of sacrifice. Mm. It's, like, really cool how it impacts. And it just, like, impacts people who are up sunbathing on their high-rise fancy apartments and eats one. It's, like, he has thought about how this monster would impact New York far more than he thought about the how hard it would be to make a monster movie on the shoestring budget
sure
he had.
Sure.
And that's why if you respect Larry Cohen, you will really appreciate, or you like that idea, you would really appreciate Cue the Winged Serpent.
Nice.
So if I'm going to try to sell you on it, I'm going to sell you. I'm not saying that this is cinema to be revered or anything, but if this is something you're into or you could find yourself into, it's really cool to think about the amount of thought these guys are putting into B-movies.
It sounds really cool.
It's really neat. Like, kind of like how you reviewed Antlers. Like, there's so much meat on the bone there beyond just the Wendigo.
It was a very dark, brooding movie.
Right.
And I'm sure the budget had a lot to do with that, but, like, lean into it.
Yeah.
They certainly did.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I think someone like Larry Cohen is an important filmmaker in the horror genre.
I agree to that.
Yeah. So
I think it's right there with Les Samurai.
It's what if there was a flying creature on at the top of the city? That's all.
And then that guy murdered a guy.
Yeah. But you get David Carradine and Richard Roundtree both as detectives in this working together. Like,
that's
come on.
Fun. That's
come
really
on.
Fun.
Like, Kung Fu and Shaft together. Like, this is great. Yeah. This is what you want. IMDb gives this a 6 out of 10. Just a flat old 6.
That's fair.
Rotten Tomato critics, 30 critics, 73%, which surprised me.
Wow.
Some Larry Cohen appreciators in the house. Yes. The audience, however, 2,500 plus, 43% for them. They weren't having it. They saw a creature feature that was not so well done. I'm up there with the critics here, though. I think it's a 7.5 out of 10. I think it's a solid movie with a lot to say, considering what it was, and the fact that he put this movie out there is really cool.
Sam, what's your score? Just yell it.
Sam gives it a 3 out of 10.
Yeah, she's been shaking her head over there the whole time you did this review.
Yeah, well, she's allowed to be wrong.
She is allowed
she
to be
can't
wrong.
Even write a proper L, so don't take her word for
They're
it.
They're free-floating L's.
Tim, hurry up and do your movie before
hey,
I die.
Hey, you know what? 1987. I'm gonna take us to Brian De Palma again.
Oh, baby.
Wouldn't
how weird
be?
Is that?
I know. It almost ended up on the same episode, and we don't plan these things. I think it's obvious, but I did The Untouchables.
Well, now we're talking about classic De Palma.
I agree. So I watched this on the 21st of February, 2024. It's an hour 59. Couldn't find one more minute. You're already there.
He was doing it for you.
I guess
he's like, you know, this guy's going to come review this movie decades later, and he's going to be like, I love a short movie. I don't want to be here for 2 hours. He made it for you.
He might have.
You know what's untouchable? The 2 hour mark.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We should just end there, but we won't.
We won't.
Crime, drama, thriller. Again, Brian De Palma directing. Starring Kevin Costner, Sean Connery, and Robert De Niro.
Yeah, great cast here.
And I loved this movie when I was young, so I was a little scared to go back and do it.
Okay.
Because every time you go back with a nostalgia movie, you're like, I don't know.
Yes.
I remember really loving De Niro in this. De Niro does a really good job playing Al Capone.
Yes.
But IMDb movie summary. During Prohibition, another Prohibition movie for me.
Yep.
Treasury agent Elliot Ness sets out to stop ruthless Chicago gangster Al Capone and assembles a small, incorruptible team to help him.
He does.
This is also an early Andy Garcia performance.
Oh, that's right.
He is one of the Untouchables, as well as Charles Martin Smith is kind of the nerdy guy.
Yeah.
He's probably better known for American Graffiti. I think that's the one role he's like better known for.
Yep.
But he's the nerdy one who kind of is like, let's get him on tax fraud.
Yeah.
He's pushing that the whole movie.
As soon as you said it, I knew exactly who it was. Yeah.
He gives you Rick Moranis vibes in this.
I think that's valid.
This movie is really good. It is way darker than I remember.
The look of this movie is just basically darkness with like 12% of the screen getting lit.
That's true. There is some dark themes here. Outside of when they go to Canada, it's very well lit in that scene.
It is.
But they're trying to stop whiskey coming over the border from Canada, which is an accurate thing that did happen.
Yes.
But it's basically like no one will challenge him. No one will challenge Al Capone. He's living his best life in his high rise.
He is.
All the cops are on the take. You find that out very early. There's a bus that goes wrong right away where Elliot Ness's picture gets in the paper. He thinks there's going to be whiskey and beer and other things in these crates, and it's just these like Asian style umbrellas.
Yes.
Costner's really good in this, but Sean Connery steals this movie. Sean Connery is such a hard-nosed ass. He's an ass in a way. Like, he does things like he's by the books. He's a great cop. He finds him by complete happenstance. After that bus goes wrong, he finds him down by the river just being a beat cop.
Yep.
He's like, why are you? And he gives him a bunch of shit. And he's like, why are you a beat cop? You're so good. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? And he recruits him to be in the Untouchables. But there are some scenes in here I had forgotten. There's a great scene where they're trying to interrogate a guy and he doesn't know his buddy's already dead. He's got shot. So Sean Connery's getting tired of waiting. So he goes outside and pretends he's arguing with him and puts his gun in his mouth and shoots his head off for the other guy to see. And I'm like, holy shit.
Yep.
And like I think that was a part with the Canadian, I don't know what rank he would have been, but
right.
He was just like, holy shit. It's like, you guys are nuts. Really cool period piece. Really cool movie. Does have that grit in it. There is some violence in here that is very surprising.
That's De Palma.
Yeah, because there are, and it's really intriguing. Like, you're just like, because you're like, I don't know who's going to make it out of this one. This one's rough.
Yes.
And there are a couple of scenes, and you know there's a good one where somebody dies, I won't say who, but you know it's happening, and you see the characters realize something is off, and they try to stop it, and they fail.
Oh, yeah.
And it is so gut-wrenching. Yeah. And you're just like, damn it, like.
And those kinds of scenes are why De Palma is such a powerhouse of a filmmaker, because you realize it kind of at the same time they do, and he's really good at making that kind of like, your stomach kind of fall out when you're watching a movie, you're like, oh, shit.
Like, oh, this won't be okay. Like, there's never a moment where you're like, oh, this might work out. You're like, no. Oh, no, shit just went south.
Yep.
This movie has a couple of moments like that. Really good. And like I said, one of the better Robert De Niro performances, I think.
Oh, yeah.
He's so incredibly good because there are moments where Elliot Ness just gets fed up and he goes, I'm coming for you. And he breaks into the down area of his high rise and he's just like yelling at him on the stairs and it's like a mad performance from him where he's like, how dare you come in here? And he's like pointing at him and he's just like spitting all over himself. And it's like so believable that he's so enraged by seeing Kevin Costner come into his home. This movie's very good. I was not disappointed with it. I was just surprised by the violence. Maybe my father edited that out or something.
It was a TV cut.
It might have been a TV cut because I was like, holy hell.
Yep.
So IMDb gave it a 7.8. Not surprising. The critics, 75 of them, gave it 83%.
Yep.
The audience, 100,000 plus, give it 89%. Mm-hmm. And I'm right with them. I gave this movie an 8. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Super good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
It is.
Yeah.
I got a movie from 2001.
Oh, yeah?
It is Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
Oh, that's not a space odyssey at all.
It's not at all.
Huh.
I watched this on 2-1 of 2024. It is 1 hour and 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's an adventure sci-fi film directed by Kirk Wise and Gary Truesdale,
okay.
Starring Michael J. Fox, Cree Summer, and James Garner.
Okay.
Yeah, your summary for this one is a young linguist named Milo Thatch joins an intrepid group of explorers to find the mysterious lost continent of Atlantis.
Oh, those Thatches.
Oh, Thatch. This movie is a Disney. It came out right after Treasure Planet, mm-hmm. and it has that Treasure Planet kind of Disney theme where they were doing a little bit more adventure, a little less kids, if that makes sense.
And it still hadn't settled the anime. The animation was getting experimental, too.
It was still in the experimental stuff. Introduction of a lot of CG elements. Mm-hmm. No musical numbers in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of the classic Disney thematic stuff, kind of like Treasure Planet, where it just had the one montage with the Goo Goo Dolls cat singing the song. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't even have that. This is just straight ahead. Like, could have been any studio that released this almost. Just you could tell it was well animated. And, you know, at the time, the CG budget was
sure
not going to be cheap for them to do the things they did. But on the whole, it's like pretty cliche. Like, good guy who's genuinely interested in something joins group of people who also seem fine, but you can tell they're kind of not probably on the level completely. Mm-hmm. They screw him over, but then he wins the hearts back of most of them, except for the corruptest of them. Mm-hmm. And then he has to try to exact finish exacting his plans, and they have to stop him. Like, we've seen this movie a bunch of times. I'm not sure what was super compelling about this particular film to Disney, because it just kind of feels like a movie I've seen 100 times.
Okay.
I love Michael J. Fox. This movie's just, like, it's not bad. Like, you could definitely do tons and tons worse, especially for children's animation of this particular era.
Right.
You do a lot worse. I do like the concepts and the art and the art direction for Atlantis was really cool and interesting and bizarre, because they even created a whole Atlantean language that was a legit language and a conlang, as it were. And it's really neat to see how much they put into the culture and thoughts of Atlantis. Mm-hmm. The problem is that was the bulk of what they put the thought and concepts into.
Dang.
Yeah. Some likable characters, but on the whole, it's like a mostly fine movie.
Did you watch this because it's in Lorcana?
Yes, it was added to the third set in a very strong way. Milo's in it, Kida is in it, and she has her flavor text is Atlantean, and it says "Welcome to the Inklands" in Atlantean on it.
Oh, that's kind of
cool. Yeah. They did a really nice job of touching Lorcana with this particular property, so we wanted to go back and check it out because I think I had seen it right after it came out to like home video, but hadn't seen it since. So that would have probably been like 2002.
Sure.
So, you know, sadly, that was a long time ago.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So I was just kind of like, okay, we'll check it out. And I was not unhappy we watched it, but I was definitely not like, oh, damn, I can't believe I don't remember that more.
Not getting your Atlantis tattoos?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Treasure Planet was a stronger effort, in my opinion.
Okay.
IMDb gives this the second best score possible with a 6.9 out of 10.
Nice.
Rotten Tomato critics, 144 critics gave this 49%. Audience, 250,000 plus went back to represent Atlantis here at a 54%.
Okay.
I give it a 6.
All right.
You're not going to be sad you watched it, but I think you can do better on the whole, especially with Disney, especially with animated features, especially with Michael J. Fox. It just felt like kind of fine in the realm of unfortunately forgettable.
Dang.
Unfortunate forgettability.
That's what we get here.